Morning, dear Sangha. Today is the fifth day of our retreat. Saturday, September the 10th, the year 2011. And today we have a session of questions and answers, and the children will have the time to ask a few questions. And then the teenagers who ask their questions. And after that, we adults will have our chance to ask our questions. We urge young adults to come up and ask their questions. We know that a good question can help many people. If you ask the right question, and many people will profit from it. A right question is a question that has to do with our practice, with our suffering, with our happiness, with our experiences. It's very easy here because we only speak English. In Plum Village, when there is a session like this, well, people will ask in different kind of languages. There are 50 nationalities represented in the summer opening. Sometimes a person coming and ask a question, she has to bring translator, her own translator. And the practice is that those of us who have a question of the heart are invited to sit up here around Thai, and we will take turn to sit on the chair so that everyone can see us. And then when Sister Zhu invite the bell to sound, every one of us will breathe in and out 3 times, and then the question will be asked. And a good question does not have to be very long. So please, those of us who have a question, come and sit close to Thay. It's very beautiful from here. Look down at the Sangha. Look in front of you. You see a beautiful Sangha. And from time to time, you read a question that is already written. And if you have a question, you might like to write it down and ask someone to bring it to Sister Pine. She will select from these questions and read it out. Now our children have the time to ask questions. They will ask about 3-4 questions, and then after that they
se preguntarán de 3-4 preguntas después. Parece que los niños se les van a hacer las preguntas primero.
Thank you. What's the purpose of life? Why did people come to life? Why are people alive now? Why is the purpose for people in life? Why have people came to earth?
It's
too difficult to answer. No, sometimes children ask very difficult questions. Like in Plumlee, one child, about 5 years old, he came up and he asked, why there is a good and bad? Very difficult questions. And many people, including scientists, have tried to answer how life has come to be. How is easier? And after we have tried to answer how, and then maybe it's possible to answer why, right?
Después de preguntar cómo, tal vez sea posible responder el por qué.
So shall we wait? Thank you for asking the question.
What makes you happy?
When you are peaceful, you can be happy. So peace makes you happy.
La paz te hace feliz.
And when you are attentive, when you are attentive, you see many wonders of life around you. Like the flower,
como la flor,
like the sunshine,
la luz
like
sol,
the mountains,
las montañas,
that make you happy.
Que te hacen feliz.
When you are peaceful, when you are
interior,
mindful,
cuando,
attentive,
pones atención,
and when you know how to love,
sabes cómo amar,
you are happy. And you make other people happy. So love is something that can make you happy. And even in the practice of breathing and walking can help you. Because if you are caught in anger, in confusion, in fear, you are not happy. But if you know the practice, if you know how to breathe, how to release the tension in your body, in your feelings, and then you can be happy. So there are many things that can make us happy. And when we come to a retreat like this, we have a chance to learn to look at the things that can make us happy. And many things that can make us happy come from within, not outside, like peace, love, attentiveness, care. Many of them come from the inside. And when you come to a retreat, we learn to see these things from inside of us. It's a very beautiful question. That's the way you see it. I don't see that I am special at all. I am like everyone else, not too special. I have two eyes, one nose, two hands like everyone. And I sit, I walk, I breathe like everyone. Not too special, not special.
Other kids in the neighborhood thinking that it's not true.
How can I bring these teachings home without the other children in my neighborhood saying it's not true?
Can you say that in five words?
Dear Thay, dear community, our friend asks, how can I bring home what I received here without the other children in my neighborhood saying it's not true?
I think this is a very good question, because what you try to tell them, they might not believe it right away, until they see that it works, you see. So let us not be too eager to share. Let us practice so that we become more peaceful, more joyful, happier. Let us practice so that we don't get angry at when someone provokes us. And then if they see us fresh, peaceful, happy, compassionate, do not get angry, smiling at a difficult situation. They will be curious, and they will ask, how can you do that? And then that's the time when you can share. So try to be kind, to be happy, to be peaceful, to be friendly, to be loving. And And they will see that after a few days, a few weeks. And if they ask, and then we have a time to share our practice. You say that, well, when you are about to be angry, and if you know how to breathe in mindfully, breathe out mindfully, do a few steps, and then you can release your anger. So if I do not get angry, when there is some provocation, it means because I know how to take care of myself and not allow anger to take over. So we can share like that. And if you have other children, co-practitioners with you, well, practicing together, they will see it more easily. And then we can make them believe that the practice is good. It's very difficult to tell people. Like when over here during the retreat, every time the bell master invite the bell to sound, everyone breathe in and out and release the tension. And together we create a very peaceful atmosphere, a very powerful energy of mindfulness and compassion. And you feel that this energy penetrates into your body. And you feel wonderful. But you cannot tell people about that unless they come and sit with us and be one among us. They cannot understand. They cannot. So it's very, really difficult to share the practice. That is why when you are a number of people, and if you sit down and you smile together, you breathe together, you can produce that kind of collective energy that you convince them. And if we use only our words, we might be able to share or to convince them that the practice is good. Now the children have asked for questions. So when you hear the bell, you might like to stand up and bow to the Sangha before you go and continue your practice outside. Have a good day. Teenagers, young adults, and others. If there is no question, and then we go out and play with the children. Teenagers.
And young adults.
Teenagers, young adults. Here, sit on the chair.
Okay, so this is kind of from all the teens, I think, right? We were wondering what you do, like, for entertainment in your free time.
This question is very interesting. Because you distinguish between the time that is free and the time that is not free. And it's very difficult to separate free time and not free time. Because when you sit practice sitting meditation or walking meditation, you can be free. It depends on your way of sitting or walking, that you have more joy or less joy. The time when you wash the dishes after dinner, if you know the practice of mindful washing. So washing dishes is very pleasant. It's very much like free time. Yeah. And many things we do, and if we know how to do it mindfully, if we know how to enjoy doing the things we are doing, and then that time is also somehow free. So we have to learn how to do things in such a way that can bring joy and happiness and relaxation. And then the time we call not free become free. So that is our practice in Plum Village. When you cook, when you clean, when you water the vegetable garden, when you arrange the cushions, when you go to the railway station in order to welcome practitioners, you learn to do it relaxingly and happily. You don't suffer during the time you work. And somehow that time is free somehow. But if you are forced to do it, if you suffer while you do it, it's not free at all. And then the time, the so-called free time, and if you don't know how to make good use of it, it may be difficult to bear also. It may be boring. You don't have anything to do, and you cannot stand it. You have to light up, turn on television, you have listened to music. You cannot be peaceful. When you are busy, you wish to have free time. But when you have free time, you don't know how to make use of your free time, and you suffer. You try to kill the free time with other things, so that is not very free. So we should reconsider. We should learn how to make use of the so-called free time and the so-called not free time, and our life will be more pleasant.
Have you ever been on the kitchen staff before?
Dear Thay, our friend asked, in Plum Village, has Thay ever been on the kitchen staff? Kitchen staff.
Thay liked to cook. And he cooked, and he has invented a number of dishes. And they intend to write a cookbook. And in Plum Village, he used to bake scrambled egg with tofu and invite the novice monks and nuns to come and eat with him. And he had good time together. And many brothers and sisters have learned a few dishes from Thay and applied it when they cook for the Sangha. So the answer is yes.
Dear Thay, dear Sangha, I'm wondering if you could talk to us younger people about following our dreams while staying in the present moment and not getting pulled away by ambition and some of the needs that might arise to be seen or to belong. Mm-hmm.
In the teaching of the Buddha, there is a source of food, a source of nutriment called volition, aspiration. Everyone should have a dream. And the Buddha also had a dream. There are four kinds of nutriments, food. The first one is edible food. You eat with your mouth. And the Buddha recommended that we eat mindfully. And we eat in such a way to preserve compassion in us, not to destroy compassion in us, so that we can connect with other living beings. The mindful eating of edible food. And the second kind of food is sensorial impressions. We consume not with the mouth, but with the eyes, ear, nose, tongue, body, and mind. When we read a magazine, we consume. That's a kind of nutriment. When we watch television, we consume. When we listen to the music, we consume. And again, the Buddha recommends that we consume mindfully so that we will not ingest toxins into our body and mind. Because a television program or a magazine article might be full of violence and fear and anger. I have to select and not to consume too much of these things. That is the second source of nutriment called sensorial impressions. This has to do with the fifth mindfulness training, mindful consumption. And in our family, in our society, we have to adopt a intelligent policy of consumption so that we will not bring toxin, poison into our body and our mind. And therefore we need people to produce only the items that do not contain toxins and poison and despair. And the young people, if they know how to protect themselves, they will not consume these things. They continue to produce these things because we keep consuming. And if we stop consuming, they will stop producing many toxic products. And then the third nutriment is dream, is our volition, is our aspiration. Each of us, human beings, should have an aspiration, a dream, a deep desire, so that we come alive. So the young people, they also should have a dream. They want to realize something. And then when Siddhartha was young, he saw a lot of suffering around him. But he did not give up to despair. So he tried to find a way in order to transform the suffering in him. And after that, help other people to transform their own suffering. So that is his deepest desire, his deepest volition. And that is the third source of nutriment, volition. And that desire is very strong, very strong. That is why the Buddha Siddhartha could go through many difficulties. And finally, he could transform himself and begin to help many people. He wanted to help many people. And that's why he spent 45 years going around in many countries, helping people to suffer less. And during the course of sharing, teaching, he built a huge sangha to support him, to help him change the way of life so that people will suffer less and have a taste of peace and happiness. And the whole life of Buddha was inspired, nourished by that kind of dream. So we also should have a good dream. But the dream should be positive. The intention should be good, because there are people who have negative volition, like the one who has a lot of hate, a lot of anger. They want to punish. They want to kill. They want to destroy. They are ready to die and to make the bombs explode so people will die, because there's so much anger and the wish, the intention to punish, to kill. And that is a kind of volition, that kind of a dream too, but it's very negative. So every one of us should look into ourselves and to identify the dream, what kind of dream we are having, what kind of intention, what is the kind of desire, the deepest desire we have in us. And if you have a desire to help people to suffer less, if you have the desire to protect the environment, the planet, if you have desire to help the children not to die because of starvation, all these kind of dream of intention is good. And that is the third source of nutriment that we have to have. So the young people, they have a lot of energy. And if they have a wholesome desire, a wholesome, beautiful dream, they can realize the dream. And that dream can be connected with the present moment. One day, a young student of Thầy in Plumlee asked Thầy this. Dear Thầy, you are over 80 now. What is the thing you would like to do before you die? Tell us your dream, anything that you like to do. And Thầy answered like this. Dear one, everything that Thầy is doing every day, I like to do it. Walking, sitting, teaching, writing, helping. Everything Thầy does, Thầy like to do it. So his dream is unfolding every day. Thầy does not need to wait for the future in order to see the dream realized. His dream is being realized in every moment. He's a happy person because he sees his dream being realized. It is being realized in the present moment, and sure it will be realized in the future. It's like when Thầy practice mindful walking and with his disciples, and when he sees that his disciples enjoy every step and experience the kingdom of God in the here and the now, Thầy is very happy. Thầy's dream is being realized in the here and the now. And Thầy know that after the dissolution of this body, Thầy's dreams will continue to be realized with his disciples. So the future and the present, they are linked to each other. And if you know that happiness, peace, and love is possible now, you are sure that it will be possible in the next step. So there is a way of dreaming that can help us to enjoy the dream right away and not to long for something that will happen only in the future. Please reflect on this. It's a wonderful teaching of Buddha.
Dear Tiger Sangha, I'm not sure if my question is too difficult to ask, but I've been practicing for a number of years now, and learning about Buddhist teachings. And more intensively over the past couple of years. I have felt a major transformation of my own suffering, being more of a better person for other people. But I see other people who are practicing maybe to the degree that I am. And sometimes I think I see other people, they're just a lot more happy, or they're truly happy, like they suffer seems like a lot less than me. And so this leads to like a lot of like kind of doubt, just that maybe Buddhist teachings or practice is not suitable for who I am, and just the kind of person that I am in my mind. I know that I can learn a lot, and I also wonder if it's that I'm practicing incorrectly, or I'm not understanding some basic things correctly. And this also kind of relates to sometimes when I want to share what I've learned with other people, I want to help people, like I don't want to try to, in a real way, you know, I don't want to try to, share from like a doubtful place, and so it kind of makes things difficult, because I do want to help people like transform their suffering and be happy,
Dear Thai, dear community, as I understood it, our friend is sharing that he's experiencing some doubt about his relationship with the Buddhist teachings and practice, because he's been practicing for some time, some years already, and he sees that he hasn't had a major transformation, and he sees other people who seem to be much happier. And so the questions that that's bringing up for him are, first of all, is he not understanding the teachings or practicing correctly? Or is it because the Buddhist teaching and practice is not suitable for him, for the person that he is? And it also raises a question for him about his desire to help other people. He questions whether he can do that effectively when he's living with this kind of doubt about his own practice. Is that right?
We have the tradition of Dhamma sharing. After having received a teaching, and we put into practice, and we got some experiences about practice. So when we sit together in a circle, we share with other people how we understand and put the teaching in practice and what we have got from that practice. What kind of success that we have produced and what kind of difficulty we have encountered. So you tell the other people in the group about your understanding of the teaching and the effect of your practice. And you tell them of your difficulty or of your success. And then they will tell their understanding and the account of their practice. And you can reflect. You can, when you hear, when you see the sharing of the other person, you can reflect back and you can reconsider your way of understanding the teaching, your way of putting it into the practice, and you may like to modify it so that next time when you practice, you will have more success. So that is why the practice of being with the Sangha and sharing the experience of practice with a group of friends in Dhamma discussion is very important. And many of us learn thanks to that. After having listened to everyone, we can feel that our understanding of the teaching changed. And we are motivated by trying some the way of some people who seem to have succeeded in the practice. So in that way, our practice get better and better every day. And we shouldn't be too stiff. We are ready to change the way we practice. And we are ready to change the way we understand the teaching. And that is recommended by the Buddha. You should not be dogmatic. You should listen and you should learn always. And the Sangha is an environment where you can do that easily among Dhamma brothers, Dhamma sisters. And the intention to help people is wonderful. But if you have not succeeded in transforming your difficulty, your suffering, you cannot help a lot. You cannot help just by repeating the teaching. You can be very helpful if you share with them that you have learned that and you have practiced that and you have got that transformation and healing. And your help is based on your experience. And it will be meaningful, it will be useful to other people if you share on the base of your own experience.
Your Thai, dear Sangha. My question is, what is the best way to embrace anxiety and guilt?
Anxiety and guilt maybe kinds of energy that have been transmitted to us by our parents, by our ancestors. Sometimes we feel that anxiety, that worry, that fear, but we don't know where it has come from. So if you don't transform, you cannot transform your anxiety, your fear, your complex of guilt, and then you will naturally transmit it to your children. It's not nice. That is why you should try to change. And when you are able to change, to transform, you do it for not only for yourself, but for your children and for your ancestors, who had not had the chance to go to that transformation and healing. So we are doing it for three generations, several generations. Like fear. Fear is inherent in us. Fear has been transmitted to us by many of our ancestors. Our ancestors had lived in fear. And among the kind of fear is the fear to be killed by a war, killed by, and to die because of starvation. Because many generations of our ancestors have suffered hunger. So they worry very much about how to survive, how not to starve. And that kind of fear has become a kind of habit, energy, that has been transmitted to us. Maybe we live in a situation where there is some kind of social security guarantee that you will not starve, but we still have fear because that fear has been transmitted to us. So with mindfulness and concentration, we look deeply and we understand the root of that fear, and that kind of insight will liberate us from fear, and we will end the fear here and not transmit it to our children. And according to the teaching of the Buddha, everything is impermanent, and that is why we can transform them. In the past, if you have done something wrong, and that complex of guilt follow you until now, and you are not peaceful with it. But according to the practice, you can transform that feeling of guilt, because you know that things are impermanent. Remember one time we have organized retreats for ex-soldiers, war veterans. There are many many young Americans who went to Vietnam to fight the war there. And many of them have died in Vietnam. More than 50,000 of young Americans died in Vietnam. And hundreds of thousands went home sick, paralyzed, full of guilt and fear. And so we used to offer retreats of mindfulness for war Vietnam veterans. It's very difficult. They are full of suffering and guilt also. And it's difficult to organize a retreat like that because we need many experienced practitioners to be in the retreat to create enough energy of mindfulness and concentration in order to embrace the huge amount of fear, anger, and suffering in the retreat. And we have to sit down and breathe and become very mindful and concentrated when we hear a war veteran tell his story. There are those who could not tell their story. They come up here, and then the pain come up here, and they could not speak out. And we had to be very patient to sit and sit and breathe and breathe and express our compassion and kindness until the person can speak out. And that is why in such a retreat we need many good practitioners to help. If Thay come alone, he cannot do much. One war veteran finally told us the story. He killed 5 children in Vietnam. And he had not told that story to anyone except his mother. That day, his unit was destroyed by the guerrillas. And many of his co-combatants died during that kind of ambush. So he got home, he survived, he got home, he got very angry. So he wanted to retaliate. And he make a box of sandwiches and put the explosives inside of the sandwiches. And he came to that village where his friends were killed, and he put the bag of sandwiches like that nearby the gate of the village. And he hid it himself. And he saw children coming out and discover the sandwich. And they ate. And after that, they began to yell, to cry. And their father and mother came out and tried to help. But that war veteran knew that it's impossible to save the children because this place is very far away from a hospital, from a city. He knew that the 5 children will die. In fact, the 5 children died because of that. He was so angry, he wanted to retaliate. And when he went back to, when he was released from the army and went back to Vietnam, he suffered so much. He did not dare to tell the story to anyone except his mother, and his mother could not help. The only thing that his mother can say is that, my son, these things happen, usually happen in a war. You should not suffer too much because of that. But he could not. He He could not get peace with that. He said that every time it happens that he sit in a room with the children, alone with the children, he can never stand it. He had to run out of the room. And he suffered like that many years until he hear about the retreat organized for war veterans. He came. During the walking meditation, the daily walking meditation, a few of them could not participate in the slow walking. One or two practitioner set up tent. And they was afraid of ambush. He put booby traps around the tent, thinking it's still in Vietnam, in the war. Fear. And a number of them could not join the walk because walking slowly, step by step, make them remember the time when they walking in the jungle, in the forest in Vietnam. And a grenade bomb can explode at any time. So they could not relive that kind of moment. So they follow us, but very far distance. And they were afraid of having an ambush because there were Vietnamese walking in that group too. Very difficult retreat. And finally, that day, he was able to tell us the story of his killing five children with sandwich with explosives in it. And they said that, okay, you have killed five children. That's not a good thing. But you are still young. You can do something else in order to neutralize that. It's because the karma, the action you have done, is not good. But you can do something else that is good, that can neutralize the bad things you have done in the past. You know that there are children now who are dying in every country, in Vietnam, in Africa, even in America, there are children who are dying. And there are children who die just because they don't have one tablet of medicine that you can afford easily to buy here. So instead of sitting there and suffer and feel the guilt, you can use your youth, your life, in order to do things to save children. You had killed children, five children in the past, but today you can save five. If you go to them, if you know how to help them, you can say save the life of 1, 2, 3, 4 children a day. And that's what you do. Can you do? And if you can do that for some time, and then it will neutralize the karma, the action of the past. And I just told him all that in 5 minutes, and he got out of his state of mind. He began to have an aspiration to go and help children who are dying in the world. And he was able to transform his feeling of guilt. And after that, he married an English girl and settled in France and lived normally. So any kind of suffering, afflictions like fear, anger, guilt, if you know how to practice, you can transform. Because everything is impermanent, including your guilt. And things can happen very quickly if you know the practice. So when you come to a practice center, we should learn this kind of exercise, practice in order to deal with any kind of afflictions that come up in us. And when you do that, it becomes light, joy and happiness is possible. And we will only transmit to our children good things, because they have transformed already the negative things in us. One question from the floor.
Dear Thay, dear community, the question here is, as a survivor of rape, how do I forgive my attackers?
The criminals, those who have created suffering to us, they are a kind of victims also. They were born or raised in an environment that is not good enough. And they had difficulties, but no one, including the parents, could help them. So they are somehow victims of the environment. And if we were born and raised in that environment, we might become like them. And that's why when we look deeply, understanding come and compassion arise in our heart, we can forgive. Now, many people in Vietnam escape the communist regime by boat. And many of them die during the trip crossing the sea to Thailand, to the Philippines, and so on. And many of them die because of the sea pirates. A sea pirate may be a poor fisherman. They are born in the coastal area of Thailand, Philippines, and so on. And they have heard that boat people, when they flee the country, they may bring all their valuable. They may bring some gold, some jewelry. And that is why if you can get them, and then we can get out of the poor, desperate situation we have been all our life. Our grandfather was poor fisherman. Our father also was a poor fisherman. And we are poor fishermen. And we have no chance to get out of this situation. Our father did not have a good education. Our grandfather did not have a good education in order to get into to get the kind of job that that can enable us to live an easier life. So if you are a poor fisherman raised in that environment, if your mother did not know how to read and write, if your father is drunk every day, and then it's very difficult for you to get an education. It's difficult for you to learn to have a loving heart. And that's why when you hear the people, that if you go out one time and got a refugee boat, and if you can get their gold, their dollars, their jewelry, and then you can get out of your desperate situation. So the poor fisherman, the young poor fisherman, become a sea pirate because of ignorance, because of his background. Suppose you are on the boat of the refugee. You have a gun. Of course, you can protect yourself. You can shoot the sea pirate. Otherwise, the sea pirate will throw you into the ocean, rape your daughter, and take the valuable that you have with them. And many more people suffer because of that. I was in France when I hear stories about poor people. Many of us try to come to refugee camps in Thailand, Philippines, and so on to help. And we encounter a lot of suffering. And every time you hear that a boat person is killed and raped by a sea pirate, you suffer. And you believe that if you have a gun and you are on a boat, you'll be able to shoot that person. But if you shoot the sea pirate, he will die. You cannot help him because he is a victim of his environment. And he did not have any education, any chance. So the sea pirate is also a victim. And if we meditate, we know that today, tonight, there will be babies born on the coastal line into these poor families. And if educators, politicians, and others do anything to help these babies in terms of food, education, and so on, when they grow up, they will become separate. And if we ourselves are born like that and raised like that, we ourselves may become separate. And that kind of meditation allowed us to understand, to see that these criminals are also victims of their environment, and that allowed the depth of compassion to be born in our heart. and we can forgive. Not only we do not want to kill them, to punish them, but we are motivated by a desire to do something to help them. To help the babies that are growing to become a separate. That is why those who rape us, they are also victims. They are victims. And that is why with that kind of understanding, we know that there are things we can do in order to help rapers to be. To prevent people to become rapers. And that is something that parents, teachers, educators, politicians have to meditate upon. We have to create the kind of action, conduct the kind of action that will help change the situation and prevent the becoming of separates, of rapers. And forgiveness is possible with understanding. You cannot forgive if you only have the intention to forgive. You want to forgive, but you can't forgive. In order to truly forgive, you have to understand, to see the truth, to understand that that person is a victim. And when you see that, compassion arises, and naturally you can forgive, and you feel lighter. And you don't want to punish him anymore. You want him or his children to have a better environment in order not to continue like that generation after generations. So many of us in society are victims of violence and anger and fear and discrimination. And the only answer is compassion. And compassion arises from understanding. And understanding is the fruit of meditation, namely the practice of looking deeply in order to understand why things become like that. And when you react with compassion, you suffer less. And you are able to help.
Nightmare.
Well, if you have a nightmare, it might be helpful to stand up, to do exercise, to take a shower, to do massage before you sleep again. Because if you continue to sleep, the nightmare may continue. And there are other things too, like refraining from watching the kind of films, televisions, reading stories that can create nightmare. The practice of fifth mindfulness training to consume mindfully, not to bring into our mind, our consciousness, these awful images. auras and the like. So if we find ourselves in an environment which is compassionate, non-violent, loving kindness, that could help transform the seeds of fear in us. And maybe something can do in order to help with the blood circulation. Sometimes the blood circulation is not good enough. And eating and drinking has to do with nightmare. And I think massage and mindful eating and drinking can help a lot. The kind of nutriment called sensorial impressions have to be very careful. Music, films, conversations, magazines may contain a lot of violence and fear and anger. And if we allow these sounds and images to penetrate too much into our store consciousness, they may be reactivated during the night. And that's why mindful consumption is a good way to reduce, prevent nightmare. And if we allowed ourselves to be in a good environment, loving environment, they will be very helpful. And to stay in an environment where there is a good, wholesome collective energy, that's good. Because every one of us radiate energy. If you are peaceful, if you are relaxed, if you are happy, and then several of you living together will create a kind of healthy, sane environment. And if you are lucky living in that environment, the situation will be much better.
I had one this night, and I felt like I am happy and I eat good here in this week, and so I didn't really know. I practiced all that what you said. So.
Yeah. Good environment is the answer.
Another written question for Thay. It says, "Dear Thay, dear Sangha, my father and I have not spoken in 2.5 years after a very negative interaction. I have tried to communicate and create understanding and preserve our relationship. My father first refused to open the letter I sent, and more recently through an email told me that he has no interest in resolving any perceived issues between us, that he was complete with his father role in my life and wished me well in my life. How do I create resolution in my relationship with my father without his willingness? How do I create peace in myself without this irreplaceable connection with my father?
I think there are two things to do, at least two things to do. The first is to see that your father is both inside and outside. And the first thing you can do is to reconcile with the father inside. Your father is fully present in every cell of your body, and you are a continuation of your father. Your father is inside, and not outside only. It's like when you hold a cup of tea, you see that the tea is here and not just there. And maybe it's more tea here than here. The best of your father may be already in you. And you have to look deeply and to see that you are a continuation of your father. And with the practice, you can make your father more beautiful, happier inside of you. That's good enough for you to be happy. And your father outside will have his strength later on, if you are able to realize the first step. To reconcile with the father inside and to transform the father inside by transforming yourself. And father and daughter, father and son can be happy inside. And that's not out of your reach. That's what that is in your power. And that will have an impact on the second step. Don't be too eager to reconcile with the father outside. Reconcile with the father inside. And that transformation in you will be seen by him outside, one way or another. And there are many ways of helping your father outside. And you don't have to do it directly. Suppose you write and you send a message that you have received his letter, that you understand very well that you thank him. And that can be given to your father by a friend that has connection with your father. And with your transformation, your reconciliation with your father inside, your friend can report to your father. And there are many ways to do that. Your friend can tell the story of another person. Not your story. It is your story, but it has other names. And in that way, that's in Buddhism is called a skillful means. And your father will be interested because he said that, well, this is a story that resemble a little bit his, but he accept to listen because not his story. And your friend will tell how wonderful the transformation take place in the young person, in the person of the daughter or the father. And maybe he would think that, why not in my case? There are many ways. And if your father get interested in that, I want that he expresses his desire to have that happen between you and him, and then your friend can reveal that it is your story and not someone else. There are many ways, but it's important to make the first step first and the second step later on, where there is a will, there is a way. Thank you. You prepare for lunch.